Hello and welcome to BC Talks, interesting discussions with interesting people from all around the world. I'm your host for today, Maria Roa, and I am delighted to be joined by Peter McNally. Pete is a senior consultant and the user experience at the User Experience Center at Bentley University, and is also on the board of Catholic Polytechnic University. He has extensive experience in usability, information architecture, accessibility, and software engineering. His current areas of interest include the intersection of user experience, also called UX, and universal design. Most recently, Pete is interested in how new technologies such as AI, for example, ChatGPT, and blockchain will impact user experience and society in general. Regardless of the area or technology, Peter always focuses on the human at the end of the product, so they can have the most seamless and engaging experience. He has worked with users and designed digital experiences in all types of industries. Pete, you are very welcome to the show.
Maria, thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, I have a thousand questions for you, so be ready. Let's move on.
All right.
Well, I would like to start by asking you, how did you start being interested in user experience? What was it that attracted you to it?
Well, first, let me start off. It's a great question. Let me start off by giving a definition on user experience. I feel it's one of these words that we throw around a lot. It's used a lot in the industry and in business technology. Well, what is user experience? You know, there's lots of definitions. I think a lot of people think of the screen, what people refer to as a user interface or UI, and that is correct. But in some ways, it's bigger than that. It's bigger than just the screen, whether it's on your phone or a website. It's really about the whole experience of the customer, the user. So their whole interaction with a product or service. So it could be, you know, using an app. Could be the, you know, maybe you have to order online and you have to go to the store to pick something up. Maybe you have to return the product because it's not working well. So that all is really part of the UX. Sometimes people refer to it as customer experience or CX. But at the end of the day, it's all about, is the customer or user, are their expectations and needs met in the right way? So that's how I would define it. For today, we probably will be focusing more on the UI side or the interface. But I just wanted to give a bigger definition of that. So let me start out by a little bit about my background. When I was in high school, I took a programming course, and you know, it was very interesting. I wouldn't say that I was super great at software or computer programming at that point, but you know, what do I want to do with my life? Well, at that time, I don't want to date myself, but let's just say this was in the early days of technology. And you know, my parents, they were immigrants. They were like, you need to get a good job, need to make some money here. There's lots of jobs in technology, computer programming. I'm like, well, I'll do that, right? So I did that. I went to university. I studied computer science. It was hard, but I got through it. After university, I was a software engineer for several years. I worked both here in the States and also in the UK outside London. And at that point, I was working on a project for the European Union at a university outside London, and it was all about designing systems for blind students so they could access the internet. And it was an early version of the internet, more about just what they called hypermedia. It was about text and images and using speech output and what they call auditory icons to convey information. So I did that for a few years, and then I came back to the States. That experience really got me excited about the UX. You know, I really said to myself, you know, I've been coding, I've been looking at the software code. I'm really more interested in the human aspect. How do people interact with products and services the best way? The coding is important, and don't get me wrong, we need to develop good systems that work. But I think if we don't have the user experience right, it doesn't really matter how well the coding is. So that's how I got involved in UX.
No, I think that's really interesting. And I think it was great that you started by giving like a definition, because as you said, many people think it's only like about the screen. And I think, I don't know how long was it, but I read something about some people say Walt Disney was one of the first people thinking about user experience when he designed like their parks, I mean his parks or something. And I think you're right. At the end, user experience is everywhere, or we should be thinking about it like everywhere, not only on the screen.
Because you know, what good is it if you have a great, let's say you have a mobile app that's fantastic, it's very easy to understand, you know, the UI is very easy, very clear, it does exactly what you want, but then when you have to talk to someone on the phone because the product you ordered doesn't work, they're rude to you, right? Or you'd be like, I don't care about the stupid app. These people were mean to me. I'm never going to shop there again because they're just not nice people. So that whole experience is part of the experience, right?
Yeah. Or once you sell the product, it never gets to the client. You know, I mean, like the shipping process, it's really bad or whatever. Right, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So there is a lot more. So yeah, thank you for that. It was great. So I know you're a big expert in UX, so I don't want to miss the opportunity to talk with you about it. UX is a big opportunity to increase revenue, customer retention, customer loyalty, and many other things. Can you give us some tips and examples to our listeners on what they need to look at?
Yes. So you're right. All that is true about, you know, a good user experience will increase revenue and customer retention. But I think it's more than that. You know, it really comes down to looking at, you know, some tips I would say would be, well, first of all, from a UI standpoint, we'll talk about the screen, whether it's on an app or a website. You know, you want to understand how is everything organized? Is it organized in the right way? The language, is the language clear? I know from your other talks, you focus a lot on content and making sure the content is clear. And that's very much part of the experience. You know, is the language written for the user, their level? You know, sometimes companies that are very technical will not write for their customer. They'll write the very, you know, a lot of jargon or technology focused language. So that's very important. But I would say, you know, I would start out even earlier than the screen. It's really, you know, before you even design a screen, it's really talking to your customers and users, understanding what they're all about. You know, do they even want your product and why? What are their challenges? What are their problems that they need to solve, and how can you help them? So, you know, before you even think about the technology or the design of your product, I think you have to have a good grounding in what they call the user needs. So that's really, you know, when I say UX is bigger than just a screen, that's really what I mean. It's really doing that upfront research, understanding, you know, what your customers or potential customers want from your product. So when you do get to the design phase, you're designing the right thing that makes sense for your customers or users.
Yeah, and when you're talking about that, your users depend many times on, I mean, we were talking just about this, behind the scenes, on the country they live and the culture they have and the language they speak. It's not only like changing a language many times. It will have to do also about like changing content, changing images. So this will also affect the design, right?
Right, of course. So, yeah, you mentioned a good point about, you know, translation versus localization, right?
Correct.
So a good example is with Asia versus, say, North America or Western Europe. You know, you can maybe translate from English to Spanish or German or what have you, and that may work in the States or maybe even in Europe. But, you know, for like different cultures that are very different, so maybe they read right to left instead of left to right, you know, something like that. So if you get in the Middle East, that's going to change your whole layout, images, even color schemes. And again, I don't remember the details, but I know certain colors that in the West, for example, red, you know, typically means danger, in, you know, in Western cultures. And I believe in the Asian culture, that may mean something different. And again, it's been a while since I studied that. You may have some input on that, but I think even the use of colors and images, it's not just about translating, but it's really about localization.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think are the most interesting areas in UX?
Right. So right now there's everything, as I said, has a a UX. So, you know, there's probably interesting areas everywhere. But I think one thing that's super interesting to me so far this year is AI or artificial intelligence, because you and your listeners may have heard a lot about the ChatGPT, which is this new technology. OpenAI is a company, and now I believe Microsoft has a big stake in it. And this is basically a tool which allow you to type in anything, any question, and like a search engine, it will come back with an answer. But what's new and exciting here is that it will give you, it'll actually write paragraphs, prose as a response. So this is super exciting because, you know, AI is not new. It's been around for a long time. And there's been this promise of AI, what will it do for us, both good and potential bad, right? There's things that may help us, but then there's also lots of risks. So this whole ChatGPT thing, I think, has a lot of people have rediscovered AI, or maybe for the first time looked at this as something that can maybe be a benefit or even not a benefit. So there's, you know, lots of examples about people using ChatGPT, like, for example, to write their papers for school. There was even a story I read in the Wall Street Journal. This company was looking to hire some people, and several candidates used ChatGPT to write a cover letter. Now, when the hiring manager got the cover letter and their CV or resume, they realized that a lot of the CVs were very similar. You know, they had a similar pattern of writing. And then they came to realize that these cover letters were written by ChatGPT. So the candidate, you know, put in all the information about the company and maybe, you know, the job description and said, write me a cover letter. And it did. And unfortunately for them, you know, they didn't really edit it, or they didn't really think about, you know, is there any risk here? And lo and behold, I don't think they got the job.
No, I don't think so either. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I have to say, I have tried ChatGPT. I think everyone has. I mean, as soon as they mentioned it, I think we all went into the internet and were like, yeah, I want to try this.
Right.
Let's see.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I didn't get the best results. I know it does tell you as soon as you download it that, yeah, maybe, you know, it needs some practice. It needs some learning, let's say, not practice,
right.
Or it needs some learning. But I was probably expecting more out of it.
Right.
I guess, as everything with AI, it will learn and it will evolution and it will get so much better and we will all be amazed by it, but not at this point yet. I think right now, whatever you ask him needs to still a lot of review from the human point, but it will probably get amazing. I mean, like not yet, but are there any recent examples of AI systems that you think they're like top right now?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned that ChatGPT will get better, and that sounds like a good thing, but I'll touch on that in a little bit. You know, it may not be, but to answer your question, just some common things. And now one thing I want to say is that, you know, I am not an expert in AI or machine learning. It's just something I'm very interested in. So I'm going to stay at a very high level just because I don't know all the details. But so if some of your listeners may be more expert in AI, I apologize if I get anything wrong, but just to, you know, I think, you know, I'm looking at it for more from the user standpoint. So I just want to caveat that. But I think one thing, you know, it's really everywhere. You know, we talked about ChatGPT as this thing that's got a lot of press and it's news, but I think it's when you look around on your phone, on your computer, it's really embedded in a lot of things. You know, they call it machine learning. So one thing, Google Maps on your mobile device, if you haven't turned this off, it will actually keep track of what you do, where you go every day. And it will, over time, based on your history and your behavior, it will give you recommendations. So in the morning, and I haven't turned this off, but in the morning, I'll get in my car going to work, and it'll tell me how long it's going to take me to go to work, because it knows that, you know, roughly every day between 8 and 9, I'm getting in my car and I'm going to the same location where my office is, right? So it knows it's using that information, and it even will know like roughly, okay, when I go to the grocery store, the supermarket. So, oh, it's Saturday afternoon. Maybe he's going to the grocery store. Here's based on traffic patterns and the weather, how long it will take you to get to the typical store you go to. So, you know, that sounds good, but it's a little scary when you think about it, because, you know, it knows a lot of personal information, a lot of private information. And, you know, if you haven't turned that off, or a lot of these, at least in the States, I know with in Europe, privacy is a little more with GDPR, it's a little more in the user's favor. But in the States, we're very much about, okay, we're going to turn it on and let the user turn it off if they want. But that's one thing. Another area is in healthcare. So I went to a talk earlier this month about AI in healthcare, and it was a lot of doctors were discussing the benefits and the challenges of AI in healthcare. So an example that was given as a potential, you know, benefit was for looking at images, say CAT scans or CT scans, looking for cancer in patients. Wow. What AI can do is it can look at an image from a patient, and it can, based on the data, which is, you know, thousands of other images of both cancerous and non-cancerous images, it can come up with a determination, you know, is this potential image, is there a cancer here or not? And, you know, that can be really useful for doctors, for radiologists, because it can save them time. Maybe they don't have enough staff or doctors to look at all the images. So this AI can go out and do that. So that's the good side. The bad side is that, well, should we trust this AI, right? What, you know, a lot of doctors are saying, well, I want to know, how did it make this determination? You know, what data did it use? And, you know, how confident is it of this diagnosis? So, you know, a lot of doctors said, oh, you know, we'd never just trust AI on its own. But still, you know, people get busy, they get stressed, they need to make a decision quickly. You know, we all say we're going to do the right thing, but the way human nature works, you know, when we get pressed for time, you know, even now with our technology, we tend to rely on our technology without maybe thinking giving a second thought. So I think that's a danger of AI, both with, you know, in this healthcare example, but even with ChatGPT, you know, we get these results. Can we trust it? How do we know that what we're getting back is true? There's been some examples with ChatGPT where people have asked the questions and the answers were not accurate. I think that's a major risk looking at the UX of AI, is the transparency and the trust. You know, will we trust it, and why should we trust it? There's all these, you know, we think it's very promising, but there's so many questions that we need to be thinking about.
And at the same time, I think in order for AI ChatGPT to learn, for any artificial intelligence, because I used to formerly work for a company that worked with artificial intelligence. So we used to teach and give data to that, feed data to that artificial intelligence in order to learn every day. You need exactly to give them more data, so it would be smarter and it would learn more. So companies have this fear of like, how should I let this into my company? I mean, which approach or philosophy should I take towards artificial intelligence? What do you think? What should they do? I mean, like, should they let it in? Should they let their employees use it? And if they do they do it with the computers from the company? Because, I mean, is this artificial intelligence going to take all our data? I mean,
right.
I think everyone is scared. That, right?
It's interesting. I think companies should go slowly and be cautious here, just because there's so many unknowns. There's one good example. We mentioned ChatGPT. Google had a competing chat product. It's called Bard, I believe. And maybe a month or so now ago, they were ready to release it, and they had an ad. And in the ad, there was asked a question about the James Webb telescope, which is out in space, and the answer that it gave back was incorrect. I don't remember the question, but it was something about, who discovered this, and it was actually discovered by, I think it was the European Space Agency or something like that. But after that happened, their stock tanked. I think it's probably, maybe it's back now, but here's a case. They're trying to keep up with Microsoft. They're trying to rush this out before testing it all the way. And then, this is a common story with all products and technology, right? But it just goes to show you that with AI, you have to be very careful and really do due diligence on everything. So I think to answer your question, I would say companies need to be really thoughtful, mindful, go slowly, and really think about the design of the entire system. What is the impact on the customer and the user? What is the benefit? Is the benefit really there for AI? Or are they just trying to put it, because everyone else is doing it, we have to include it? Well, maybe it doesn't make sense. Maybe it's not the best approach. Maybe there's another technology that's not machine learning that might be better for the user. So again, it's going back and really doing that due diligence up front, understanding your customer, your user, seeing what they're all about, seeing what they really need, and then going from there. And then if you use AI, make sure you're very transparent in how it's working. And if you need to see, and then this may depend on the application, but I would say give the user a way to understand the reasoning if possible.
So what advice would you give to individuals just getting started in UX?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I would say if people are interested in UX, a couple of things. Now I'm going to just very high level, not even talk about design or tools that maybe people use to design screens. I'm going to take a step back and talk about just talking to people, right? So a lot of people in UX come from very different backgrounds. So you have people who are maybe from a computer science background like myself. You have people who come from journalism. People come from psychology, from business. So the good news is UX is a very broad field. There's lots of subdisciplines. There's design. There's the research end, which is what I do more of. There's also, I mentioned accessibility earlier, universal design. That's making sure all people are included in the design, people with disabilities, for example. But what I would say is a big part of UX is understanding the customer. So what I would say is you really want to make sure you know how to have good conversations with folks. So don't ask leading questions. So if you want, for example, if you're talking to someone about your product, you don't want to say, do you like this product, or is this going good for you? You want to be more open-ended. So maybe how is this, tell me about how you use this product. How is this product going in general? Just at a very high level, you want to don't lead the user, don't lead the customer, and ask open-ended questions so you can get their story. You don't want to ask, if you're talking to someone, closed questions with a yes or no answer. So there's more to it than that, but I would say, it's really important to be able to feel comfortable talking to customers or people who may be prospective customers, understand what they're all about. That's number one. Number two, I actually have a book here that I think would be good for folks to read on my bookshelf here. It's called The Design of Everyday Things. Now, this book, I read, this is probably about, maybe 30 years old now. It was written by Don Norman, who in the UX world is one of the, the founding fathers of the industry. Maybe some people have different opinions on him, but regardless, he wrote this book. And it's the reason why I like the book is it really talks about the psychology of design, looking at the affordance, that is, how do people know you can, for example, push something? Here's a classic example of what they call Norman doors. So he talks about doors in a hotel lobby. How do you know if you should pull or push the door? And a lot of that is based on what he calls the affordance of the handle. So it's things like that, but he talks more about, you know, technology also, but I think it makes you think about just design in the world, you know, not just computers, but everywhere. And I think that's, you have to have that kind of that growth mindset getting into UX, that how can I, you know, how can I improve things that are going to be better for people?
I think we could be talking forever, seriously, but we come to the top of the time. So before we go, I want to ask you if there is anything else that you would like to share with our audience. And please, before you go, I know probably many people are with lots of questions. So if you have an email that you can share where they can
One thing I wanted to mention, we talked about companies and how they can maybe do a better job. So, you know, one of the things that really drives me in this, and I didn't mention earlier, but you know, is my faith. I'm Catholic, and one of the reasons why I got into technology in the beginning is trying to help people make better products. You know, trying to use my talents as best as possible. And interestingly enough, Pope Francis, back in 2020, and the Vatican, he got together with Microsoft and IBM. It was called the Rome Call for AI Ethics. And they came up with a list of 6 principles for designing AI systems, which I think is very interesting. And they're transparency, inclusion, accountability, impartiality, reliability, and privacy and security. And what's happened that with that is Microsoft, IBM, Google, have taken those principles and are using those to develop ethics around AI and design patterns and templates. So, you know, all those companies and more are coming up with their own kind of best practices around design for AI. You know, like the big question, well, will they actually follow those principles? Or will they, when push comes to shove and it's money's on the table, will they go out the window? People are interested and want to touch base with me. I can be reached by email, pmcnallyux@gmail.com. That's pmcnallyux@gmail.com. And also I'm on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/IN/McNallyPeter. And then lastly, during the day, I work at a consultancy at Bentley University in Massachusetts. It's called the User Experience Center. Our website is bentley.edu/UXC. And then also I'm on the board of a new university called Catholic Polytechnic University. The URL there is catholicpolytechnic.org if you want to check that out. So it's a university that's looking at both science and faith. So that's some of the things. I'm happy to any more questions, Maria, or if anyone wants to reach out, please feel free to get in touch.
That's great. Thank you so much. I mean, that would be all. And that's more, I mean, like, I wish we had more time, because seriously, UX, artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, I mean, actually, maybe we should do another Vista Talks in like a couple more months, because probably everything has changed. I mean,
That's the thing. It changes so quickly. You know, it's, you think you know it, and then something else comes along. It's almost not worth to, you know, read up on it, because it's going to be changing by the time you're done, you know?
It is. It's crazy. But I mean, that's how much time we had today. So thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you, Maria. It was a pleasure.
No problem. So that's the end of today's show with Peter McNally. Please make sure to tune in again to see or to listen to the next Vista Talk show, where we will be discussing more interesting topics with interesting people from all around the world.